Fire blast.
Ryan hoisted the Sig Sauer and stared into the dark interior of the war wag, helpless to do anything to save the young man from whatever had seized him.
What's happened?
Jack had turned and was already running back toward the wag, the steel gleaming cold in his hand. But all of it was too late to help man seized behind sun.
Nice trick, you bunch of bastard! Suck on this!
He's got a grin!
Oh, shit!
Jack turned and sprinted toward a dip in the ground about 15 yards away, throwing himself into it in a perfect racing dive. The others all moved with varying degrees of speed, most hurling themselves straight onto the ground, curling up, their hands over their ears. Ryan was stranded. He knew that one of the general's men had played it double cunning, sitting tight and still in the fetid blackness of the wag, hearing the confusion and the killing of his companions, taking out man seized behind sun by dragging him down the cockpit and killing him there. And the man had a grenade. Ryan was literally sitting on top of the bomb. Combat reflexes took over. He kicked out at the open hatch. Dropping the Sig Sauer, he started to roll backward, jolting himself as he came off the turret, keeping going in a clumsy somersault. It was only about 4 feet from the rear of the LAV-25 to the furrowed earth, but it felt like 40 feet. He landed hard. Part of his mind screamed for him to get up and run like smoke for cover, but the cool, considered part knew that might be the best way to buy the farm. Ryan burrowed down, keeping his body as flat as he could, his head away from the war wag. He cupped his ears with his hands, closing his eye, letting his mouth sag open, knowing from years of experience that this was the best chance of avoiding terminal injury when the ground exploded. The ground trembled.
It implode.
Implosion grenades had been invented in great secrecy using antimatter in the last years before the nuke holocaust. When an implode was detonated, everything around was sucked instantly into its heart, as though a sudden, immensely violent vacuum had been created. The wag behind him vibrated in the enfolding mud, and the hatch of the turret flipped backward. The LAV-25's interior was destroyed. Overlaying it was the never-forgotten stench of burned meat. Ryan was suddenly aware that his ears were ringing. He touched them and found that he was bleeding a little, with still more blood dribbling from his open mouth. He realized that he must have blacked out.
Is he all right?
That voice was familiar. Ryan wondered whether it might be the man called the Armorer. Someone held him by his left shoulder, shaking him hard, as though they imagined him to be locked deep in sleep.
Come on, lover.
Awake.
Stunned.
Awake.
He's coming around.
That wasn't a voice Ryan recognized at all.
He trapped man seized behind sun inside the wag.
No.
Ryan knew that wasn't true. Well, it had a kind of partial truth to it, which he could easily explain if they gave him a chance. He opened his eye, finding that he was lying on his back, about 80 yards from the burning wreck of a small war wag. There was plenty of smoke filtering from every orifice in the military carcass, but very little flame. The sky was still dark, with the first pallid fingers of dawn light barely visible away to the east.
Implode.
What, lover?
He could smell Christy close by him, the familiar scent of her body rising over the permeating miasma of oil, rubber, and gasoline, and scorched flesh.
It was an implode, Gran.
Yeah, we know. We all heard it. Are you feeling all right, Ryan?
Yeah. Bruised and scratched, but not too bad.
You shut the door on our brother.
This accusation came from a dark figure to Ryan's right, one of a group of 8 men, the surviving Navajo.
There was another of the general's killers left inside. When man seized behind sun went on the wreck and counted them, he counted wrong. The man was hiding, and he pulled the kid down and was chilling him in the command center of the wag.
Who released the grin?
I don't know, sleeps and day. Could easily have been the enemy. I think it was. The kid shouted to warn me.
Why did you not help him?
How, Firemaker?
Pull him free.
Ryan sat up, wiping grit from his face, feeling his own anger swelling, the scar on his cheek throbbing.
I was sitting right on top of the oven. The grin went off about 7 seconds after that. I nearly got my fucking head blown off as it was, you triple stoop. What the fuck could I have done?
Simmer down, Ryan. It's over.
Our brother died. And you closed the door where he might have escaped.
Sure I did. If I hadn't, then the noise would have been heard by everyone from the lakes to the Grandy, and all the fucking way back again.
But our brother died!
Sure, Firemaker. So did all the men and women we set out after. Not a bad deal. One life for their lives.
Chindi!
He's got you there, Ryan. You are a bit of a bastard.
Ryan was on his feet, shrugging off Christie's restraining hand.
Nobody but nobody!
This is not the time, and not the place.
The leader of the Native Americans, Sleeps in Day, stepped between Ryan and Thomas.
I'll fight him now.
The skirmish hadn't gone well. The violence from the woman, then the unexpected death of the teenage Navajo, and the destruction of the wag had all taken a toll on Ryan's nerves. He was more than ready to take on Thomas right there and then.
Let it lie, Ryan. We got a job to do.
Fuck the job!
Ryan was suddenly aware that the Navajo had all gone into a huddle, and Sleeps in Day was holding Thomas by the arm, whispering urgently to him.
Dad?
What do you want, Dean?
Not worth fighting, Dad, is it? We gotta get on to revenge Christina and Jenny and Michael.
Ryan closed his eye and turned away.
I guess that's so, son. All right. Look, Firemaker, Sleeps in Day. I'm truly sorry the boy died. He died bravely, and his warning saved a lot of lives.
The entire group turned toward Ryan, the rising sun throwing their faces into deeper shadow. Thomas whispered something, and several of them nodded. But it was Sleeps in Day who answered for them all.
I think you speak the truth to us, One-Eye. Perhaps our brother was doomed anyway. It was his day to die, as we say. But you locked the door on him, and made his death certain.
His death was certain the moment the bastard inside that wag pulled the pin on the implode.
A man does not turn his back on a friend.
Bullshit.
JB, this isn't helping. Look, people, there's no way of deciding this. Just one question. Do we go on after the general, or do we stop now? Or split up and each try to chill them on our own? Which way do you want to play it, Sleeps in Day?
We go on together. After all is finished, we may talk of this again.
Sure. Fine with me. Now time's wasting, and the sun's rising fast.
It seemed likely that the general would send out a relief party to dig the trapped war wag clear, probably soon after first light. They'd find the destruction in the bodies, and would know that there was a serious threat close by their camp, and would send word back to the general. The attempt to infiltrate the underground headquarters would be far more difficult. It was a simple problem, and Ryan knew that there was a simple solution.
The J.C. Wright Caverns.
From the appearance of the sign, it somehow looked like it had been battered and faded, even when it was new, which was around 100 years ago. Better than Carlsbad. That was the main boast on the huge billboard. One of the main supports had rusted through and tumbled, leaving the sign leaning at a drunken angle toward the left, part of it buried in the gray sand.
Not so big and not so many bats, but beautiful and cozy. That is, I believe, about the only totally honest advertisement I've ever encountered.
Doc slapped Judas across the top of the head as the mule tried to sidle sideways and brush him off into a big saguaro. Everyone had reined in, stopping to look at the sign, which teetered on the side of an ancient blacktop. The marks of the surviving wag passed within 100 yards of the sign, turning to follow the sand-covered highway south.
How far?
The sign says it's only a few minutes ahead, Christy. That could mean anything between 5 and 50, probably near the ladder.
Ryan looked behind them. The smoke from the burning wag was almost extinguished, but there was still a menacing pillar rising vertically for 200 or 300 feet into the dark sky, until the light breeze tugged it out of shape. If the general had men out on watch, then it seemed an even chance that one of them might have spotted it. Dawn was less than an hour back.
Reckon we should think about getting ready to meet their patrol.
To repair the wag, One-Eye?
Yeah, Sleeps in Day. Could cross our path in a few minutes.
Ruins of a gas station there.
Jack pointed to the right with a long, bloodless finger, where there seemed to be a dirt road cutting in from the west, and the dust-covered foundations of a few buildings.
That'd be good.
Let us go and hide there. You stay here with your good blasters. Any you miss will fall onto our spears.
If they'd all sat around and argued for half a day, Ryan doubted whether they'd have been able to come up with any better plan. All it needed was a little checking of the nuts and bolts of the idea.
Sounds good to me, Two Dogs Fighting.
Ryan and JB agreed that the rescue and repair party wasn't likely to consist of more than 7 or 8 at the outside. The general was only a spit away from his home base, in territory that he knew well. Though he might suspect there was some threat, he would probably only look for it to come from a handful of poorly armed savages on ill-fed pinto ponies. Dean and Doc, along with young pony Runs, were delegated to take all of the animals, including the protesting Judas, and lead them into an arroyo that ran behind the gas station. The mule had made its feelings known, with spectacularly vicious braying and kicking out.
You keep it real quiet or you slit its throat, Doc.
Mayhap I might gently open a large artery anyway, Ryan, my dear fellow.
Just keep it quiet.
Sleeps and Day led Two Dogs Fighting, Thomas Firemaker, and the other four warriors to form a ring around the scattered remnants of the tiny vill. In less than 5 minutes, they had each scraped out a shallow trench, quickly piling the loose earth over themselves. Ryan stared at where he knew they were hiding, but couldn't see any trace of them.
Hope they can use those old blasters they got, as well as they can camouflage themselves. Wind's veering and freshening. Could be there's plenty more double-heavy rain on the way.
JB, along with Jack and Christy, picked hiding places for themselves along the side of the blacktop, using the shattered remains of a storm drain as cover. But the bulk of the responsibility for the firefight was going to fall on Mildred and Ryan's shoulders. They were the best shots in the group, she with her Czech target pistol, and he with the Steyr hunting rifle.
You coming?
You ready, Mildred?
As I'll ever be.
J.B. Dick stood up briefly, clenching his fist and opening it 5 times.
There's 5 of them. Remember who they are and what they did, Mildred. Christina and the little baby. Michael Brother, I need you. Take them out clean and fast. Headshots if you figure you can make them good. But they have to be all aces on the line.
Sure, Ryan. And so we bid a fond farewell to the good old Olympic spirit. Today's event for Mildred Wyeth is the Free Pistol Massacre. I'll go for gold.
The 5 men rode donkeys and wore the uniform of the general's followers. Black shirts and pants with a red stripe down the leg, black berets and black boots. They were still a couple of 100 yards away, but Ryan could already make out that 4 of the 5 sported mustaches. There was no sign that they were aware of being watched or of any potential threat. They rode slow and easy, legs out straight, laughing and joking with one another. Ryan noticed that they carried picks and shovels strapped to their saddles, ready to dig out the wag. Mildred wiped the palm of her right hand down the side of her reinforced military jeans.
Lambs to the slaughter. Lord, forgive us for what we are about to do.
Amen. The range had now dropped to below 100 yards. Looking neither to one side nor to the other, the group had ridden past where the 7 Navajo warriors lurked amid the ruins of the gas station.
I'll start with the tall one on the left.
Fine.
Wait as long as you can, Mildred.
Of course.
Where they waited, among a nest of boulders, the ground was slightly higher than the trail ridden by the general's men, which made for more difficult shooting. 60 yards. Ryan still hadn't brought the rifle to his shoulder, waiting as long as possible. The wind was now fresh to strong, blowing directly up from the south, reducing the chances of anyone at the general's caverns hearing the shots. Also, the 5 men were now in a shallow dip in the land, which would also tend to trap the sound of the blasters. Ryan glimpsed Jack flat on his belly, crawling through the stubbly grass toward the riders. The sun, peeking through a belt of low clouds, glinted off something metallic held in the teenager's right hand.
Now?
The range was now 30 yards. Ryan lifted the SSG-70 and pressed his eyes against the starlight scope.
Now.
Ryan's man was kicked backward off the donkey, his arms wide, the left side of his face vanishing in a mist of blood and splintered bone. It took only a moment to work the bolt action on the Steyr. By then, Mildred was already in action. Using the shortfall thumb-cocking hammer and a blur of movement, she fired from a standing position, just as though she'd been in the butts of the games, her right arm extended, left hand gripping the other wrist, sighting along the barrel with both eyes open. Each shot was aimed with lethal precision. If the center of each man's nose had been the target bolt, all 3 38s would have been top-scoring aces on the line. The men went down as though they'd been felled by a sweeping sword of divine retribution. The first of them hadn't even collapsed off his donkey, a corpse in the dirt, before the 4th was clinically dead. The 5th man had the luck that his animal reared and threw him onto his hands and knees, behind the braying, rearing animals, briefly covering him from the devastating fire of the rifle and revolver. Ryan had him in the sights for a moment, but he hesitated, not sure of a clean kill. But Ryan knew that there was no way that the dismounted man would be able to escape from the rest of the waiting group.
Man!
Hey! Dios mío! Merced, por favor! Merced!
The man scrabbled back toward the old gas station.
I can...
No!
Jack's wrist snapped forward, and the thrown blade plunged through the air. Ryan lost sight of the knife in the poor light, but the man kept running, stumbling over the rough ground, leading to the unthinkable conclusion that Jack had actually missed him. Not that it made much difference. To the gut-tearing horror of the fleeing man, the earth moved in front of him, and seven vengeful figures rose from the ground, all as pale as spirits of the night. The man skidded to a halt, looking as if he were about to fall on his face. Before that could happen, the Navajo lifted their blasters and opened fire at him. He staggered to his knees, then tumbled over, rolling twice, and finally lying still on his back, staring sightlessly at the dawn sky.
Hi-ya!
The Native Americans all rushed to surround the corpse of their enemy.
Had it not been for us, this one would have escaped to tell the tale and betray us all!
Two Dogs Fighting shook his single-shot rifle at the watching Anglos. Ryan was about to acknowledge the possible truth of that when Jack interrupted him.
No.
Sleeps in Day was brushing sand and dust off his face, hair, and clothes, but he stopped at the single word from Jack.
What?
I said you didn't chill him.
This is madness. The holes in his flesh leak their blood. It cries out from the barrels of our blasters. How can you say such a thing?
Look.
Jack walked straight up to the group of warriors and pushed them aside as though they didn't exist. The others had followed him down into the hollow, joining him by the corpse. Ryan stared down at the body, seeing that the man was young, probably around 20. His complexion was dark, and his mustache was long and drooping. His shirt was torn across the chest by the impact of the bullets, the wounds scattered, none of them actually looking to be immediately fatal. Sleeps and Days scowled, touching the dead man with the muzzle of his gun.
If we did not kill him, then tell me, Whitehair, who did?
Me. Look.
Jack knelt and rolled the corpse onto its face. The man's back was ragged and sodden with blood, showing the impact of the Navajo bullets.
There is how he died. It shows your lies.
This is ridiculous.
None of your bullets would have chilled him.
Jack felt in among the long matted hair at the man's nape.
Here.
He peeled the hair back to show everyone the hilt of the knife driven deep into the body, just below where the skull sat on the spine.
That killed him.
He was still running.
Like a chicken.
Jack pulled the leaf-bladed weapon out and wiped it on the dead man's pants.
Like a chicken.
How much time before the general works out something's gone double wrong?
Could be as long as 4, maybe 5 hours. Why, JB?
Could be little as an hour.
Nah, it's gotta be longer than that. I reckon the bottom line on time is 2.5 hours. Then he sends out a search party. By then, we should have reached the caves.
JB took off his glasses to polish them.
That is, if Sleeps in Day and all his brothers don't decide to start another Indian war first.
Well, you might have a point there.
There had been a degree of tension and hostility within the Uneasy Alliance right from the beginning. A traditional dislike that probably had its atavistic roots at least 300 years in the past. The near fight between Thomas Firemaker and Ryan had simply been a case of glowing embers bursting out into an intense flaring fire. Though that had passed, it had widened the gulf between Anglo and Navajo. Then the bitter argument over who had killed the last of the general's repair party had come close again to outright conflict, despite the fact that it had eventually become obvious to everyone that the mortal wound had undeniably been inflicted by Jack's throwing knife. Ryan discussed the problem with all of his own group of friends, and it was agreed that they should try to avoid any further difficulties, at least until the caves were reached and the firefight won. The uneasy truce had been resumed. The blacktop wound up and over the ridge ahead of them, opening onto a wide valley, its sides studded with groves of tamarisk and live oak. Dean reined in his mount and pointed to the right.
Look, Dad!
Doc was currently winning his battle with Judas, but he managed to stop the mule without too much of a struggle.
It appears that the general is a man who believes in leaving his calling cards at his own front door.
There had been a series of billboards set along the road on steel frames. Only one of these remained, carrying the message that it was only a half mile to the J.C. Wright Caverns, where an unforgettable experience is waiting just for you. The remaining Stark frames were all decorated with corpses in varying stages of decay, ranging from dislocated skeletons, desiccated by the southwest sun and wind, to bloated bodies, swollen by the rotting gases of the stomach. As the companions heeled forward, constantly keeping an eye on the skyline for any sign of danger, the party fell silent at the horror of the mutilations. Some had been crucified upside down, many of the bodies showing the clearest evidence of having been tortured by fire. Most of them lacked fingers and toes, and not one of the weathered skulls was complete.
The bastards.
Be good to make the earth a mite cleaner with their passing.
When has that ever mattered, John?
The two most recent corpses, nearest to the entrance to the caverns, looked as though they both might possibly once have been female. But it was difficult to tell, as the breasts had been hacked off, and the genital areas were simply patches of scorched and clotted blood. Most of the hair was gone, and the carrion crows had already taken the eyes and the soft tissues of the face. Thomas Firemaker hurled himself from his pony, running to stand beneath the bodies, his head thrown back, his mouth open.
Firemaker!
Looks like he just found a couple of his relatives that the general and his men took along with them for sport.
Yes, they are Thomas's sister and the sister of his mother.